Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by your CFRC News Collective, Ara McCauley, Jesse Bell, and Jenny Hinch. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcasts, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Ara McCauley, and here are your local news headlines. City Council voted last night to proclaim July 15th Extreme Heat Awareness Day in the city, following a proposal put forth by Seniors for Climate Action Now's Kingston chapter. The date coincides with a planned press conference that the group will be holding at City Hall on July 15th. CFRC spoke with Tara Kaner, a member of SCAN, about the reason for the group's proposal, as well as their plans for the press conference. I'm here with Tara, a volunteer with SCAN, which is Seniors for Climate Action Now in Kingston. And Tara, I wanted to speak to you today because you have a proclamation at this week's council meeting. And I wonder if you could talk about that declaration, what you're proposing and why.
Well, we approached Councillor Connie Glenn a few months ago, knowing that we wanted to proclaim an Extreme Heat Awareness Day. We took inspiration from Australia. There's a climate justice organization there called Sweltering Cities. It was founded in 2020. In the last 2 years, they proclaimed a certain day. They decided a day ought to be marked to raise awareness about extreme heat because people are not educated about it. People don't know how to protect themselves against it. And, you know, we can't pretend anymore that climate change is down the road. We're having cascading heat waves. Europe is currently on fire. We've had fires in Canada, certainly. The proclamation itself just points out that there are cascading heat waves, that heat is actually the most dangerous consequence of climate change. It's more dangerous than all other climate catastrophes put together. It affects many more people. Climate deaths are always underestimated because, depending on who is doing the documentation, you know, people consider they have died because of a heart attack or of a respiratory failure or kidney failure or something like that. So Ontario has no policy around tracking and proclaiming heat deaths. They do in Quebec and they do in BC and they do in some places in Europe. But anyway, the United Nations says that there's one person every day on Earth now who dies of the heat. And it's more than 500,000 people over a year that are dying of heat. So it's a very serious consequence of climate change. And we want to bring, you know, we have been addressing council for the past 3 years. We first went to them and gave presentations in August of 2023. And we have been, you know, in contact with them ever since to urge them to take some kind of action against extreme heat in particular, climate change in general, of course, but extreme heat in particular.
And you've set July 15th as the proposed day for this, and I understand that you have some action related to that as well. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yes. So we have asked the city to proclaim July 15th, Extreme Heat Awareness Day. That goes forward to City Council. Councillor Connie Glenn is putting it forward. I don't expect that we will be denied, so I think that will go through. And then on July the 15th, the following week, we are having a press conference and we're inviting different experts in the community to talk about extreme heat and how it affects people. And you know, our main mission here is to raise awareness because many people aren't aware of how dangerous heat is and what the symptoms are and how you can protect yourself against it.
Where will the press conference be held?
Yes, it'll be in the Station View Room, which is on the first floor of City Hall, and it is public. So if somebody wanted to come by and witness that, they're certainly welcome to do that.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your organization as a whole. So this is the Kingston chapter.
Yes.
If people have been out and about, SCAN does have a visible presence at different events, sometimes very striking.
Well, it is actually a national organization, although not all provinces have chapters. Anyone can be a member, although according to our constitution and bylaws, in order to vote in our organization, you need to be a senior. And so people just simply looked around the world. We are all older. Many of us have children and grandchildren. We're frightened for the future. We feel a responsibility for the world ending up this way. So we're just trying to do what we can to mitigate climate change. First of all, you know, the primary cause of climate change, which isn't said often enough, is burning fossil fuels. And we are not doing a good job at all of mitigating that. As I'm sure you've heard in the news, our prime minister has all of these nation-building projects like pipelines that are only going to subsidize the fossil fuel industry and continue to raise emissions. So this is very, very bad for our climate and for our health, generally speaking. So those of us in the organization feel that it's incumbent upon us to do something, whatever we can do in the short time we have left.
Plus, like, this is also coming on the heels of a press release that Mark Carney held on Canada Day, when not a lot of people are probably listening to the news, where Canada is actually going back on some of the goalposts for emissions.
Yes, he's basically dismantled all of them. Prime Minister Trudeau, you know, a lot of people couldn't stand him, but he actually did a much better job on the climate. Carney has systematically undermined, ignored, dismantled all of those protections. We know we used to have a ban on pesticides. That ban is gone. As you say, we had targets under the COP25, I think it was in Paris, to keep emissions below a certain level. We're not going to make that target. As you probably also know from the news, is the former environment minister under Prime Minister Trudeau, Stephen Guilbeault, resigned. First of all, he resigned from cabinet, and then he resigned altogether from the Liberal Party because of those decisions. So it's very, very disappointing. A number of people feel betrayed by our prime minister because he presented himself prior to election as a man who cared about climate.
You talked about a lack of public awareness around certain issues. Where can people go to learn more, and perhaps starting with your own organization?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of information on the internet, but on the ground, information in Kingston is not easy to come by. Federal government doesn't see climate disaster as their role. It's the role of municipal governments. First of all, if a municipal government can't handle it, we can call in the province. And if the province can't handle it, they can call in the army. When I went to Sustainable Kingston, asked them, okay, what do you suggest I do? They said, talk to your neighbors. I mean, in some ways, that's good advice. I mean, we do need to have solidarity around these issues. We do need to know the people who are around us and be aware that some of them are going to need taking care of in the event of a disaster. But again, that throws everything on the individual. Individuals can only do so much. We don't have the resources of a government, whether it's municipal, provincial, or federal. And I think that's very short-sighted and unfair, and people are going to suffer and die as a consequence. We have requested a maximum temperature bylaw. The only municipality in Canada so far that has actually passed one is New Westminster in BC. And that has been passed, but it's not implemented, and it's not likely to be implemented until next summer. Toronto did pass a bylaw as well. They were going to draft it in 2026 and implement it in early 2027. Now they've pushed that back because landlords are saying, you know, they can't do it, they can't afford it. And the city is concerned that landlords will try to put all the cost onto tenants, and tenants can barely pay their rent now as it is. But landlords have a responsibility to keep their units safe. And, you know, there's this big question, who pays? You know, I often wonder about when there was a transition from open fires and, you know, wood stoves to furnaces. Was there this hue and cry from landlords, oh, we can't put in a furnace, it's too expensive? I doubt it. It doesn't make any sense that we would be kept warm in winter, and yet, knowing how deadly heat can be, we're not protected in the summer. It's going to have to happen. People need to be protected.
It does seem a surprising thing, considering, as you mentioned, the real dangers for health. And I did a story on Monday's program as well about the heat in relation specifically to individuals who are unhoused, but it does relate to anyone who doesn't have access to air conditioning, for example, and they're staying inside apartments, which can get
deadly.
There's the immediate physical issues, but it can also put a major strain on mental health. Even certain medications that you're taking, it can impact how your body processes them. And the increased strain that that puts on the healthcare system and emergency rooms. Where does that prevention piece come in, and when do people start paying attention to that?
The Residential Tenancies Act does not have a maximum temperature. It has a minimum temperature. You have to keep the heat on from, you know, X month to Y month at a certain temperature, but not cooling. And again, it makes no sense. And we're not necessarily, you know, saying that everybody needs to have an air conditioner. That's not good for the environment. We know that. But as you were saying, people don't look ahead. They don't put things in place to mitigate what's going to happen in the future. I mean, more green space, more trees around. You know, there's certain kinds of glazes or wooden grills or shades that can be put on windows. Heat pumps are much better than air conditioners, and we certainly would like to see a lot more places get heat pumps. But in the very short term, when 619 people died in BC in 2021, when the report came out afterwards, they said in the short term, two things absolutely need to happen. People need to have air conditioning to keep them alive, and there need to be heat alerts so people are aware of what's happening. So yes, I mean, in the long term, buildings should be built differently. Buildings could be retrofitted. New Westminster, for instance, they have passed this bylaw. It's not yet implemented, so it's not being enforced yet, but they left it open. One room in a residential unit has to be at 26 degrees or below. How you keep that room cool is going to be up to the landlord. And without passing the cost on to tenants, though, that's something we've been very firm about, because tenants can't pick up the tab.
One of the other things we're talking about at council is looking at affordable housing and acknowledging, as of right now, the vacancy rate for apartments is 2.4%. Tenants can be afraid to speak up.
Very much so. Since I left home at 17, I've always been a tenant. And the thing about being a tenant that a lot of people don't seem to understand is you are really powerless. You don't have the autonomy to go out, and if you can afford an air conditioner and then you can afford the utilities that the extra electricity is going to cost, your landlord may stop you from doing that. Although the province of Ontario did, just on July 1st, pass a law, Bill 97, which states that tenants will be allowed to have air conditioning. But that still doesn't mean that there's a maximum temperature bylaw.
What are your hopes with the press conference? What are you hoping for next steps?
Well, as I say, we first went to City Council in August 2023. So nearly 3 years ago now, to ask for a maximum temperature bylaw. We had heard that Hamilton was looking at it, Toronto was looking at it. You know, we had a petition, we had over 1,200 signatures. We presented to City Council. At City Council, they've gone through a few permutations. They did pass a bylaw to keep temperature at 26°C, but only in those units where air conditioning already exists. So if you don't have air conditioning, you don't have any protection. The city also said that there was no standard in the Residential Tenancies Act, and so they couldn't, you know, undermine that by trying to bring in a bylaw. However, since July 1st, another MP, Catherine McKenney out of Ottawa, brought a private member's bill forward asking for a maximum temperature bylaw and to put that standard in the Residential Tenancies Act. And Rob Ford's housing minister's office responded to say there's nothing preventing municipalities from putting in maximum temperature bylaws. We hope this press conference raises those questions, and Councillor Connie Glenn will be there, and hopefully the city will take the next steps that are necessary.
The official plan has been postponed, and part of the reason for that was based on some environmental studies that have happened talking about green space in Kingston and concerns like that. It could potentially be a very timely opportunity.
You can't ignore it. You know, you can't escape it. It's very present, I think, in a way that it wasn't even a year ago. I am more hopeful. SCAN does indeed have a website, and it's the provincial website. There's lots of information on it. We do have a SCAN group that meets regularly once a month. Our meeting actually is on Wednesday. People are welcome to, you know, come to a meeting if that's what they'd like to do. So the press conference is on July 15th, where we will declare that day as an extreme heat awareness day. It's in the station view room on the main floor of City Hall, and it's from 11 a.m. till noon.
And the website for those interested is seniorsforclimateactionnow.org. And if you check the drop-down menu, you can find the Kingston chapter. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is your sports report for Wednesday, July 8th, brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. It was a rather sad end to an otherwise historic run for the Canadian men's national soccer team as their World Cup dreams end in the round of 16. And although the 3-0 result on paper may appear disappointing, this is a team that vastly exceeded outside expectations and took home the first round of 16 performance in the program's near century-long history. And though the tournament has ended for the Canadian squad, it's best to think of this as just the beginning. Moving now to local football news, all four Kingston Grenadiers teams were in action over the weekend in the first round of the OSFL playoffs. The U-12 AA Grenadiers fell 48-24 to Peterborough in their first ever playoff appearance. A lot of growing pains for this U-12 team, but the future looks bright for the youngest section of the Grenadiers. The U-14 AAA Grenadiers blew out the North Toronto Sentinels 54-0 in a three-phases dominant performance to advance to the OSFL U-14 semifinals. The U-16 Grenadiers kept up that good feeling with a 23-15 victory over the Peel Panthers to advance to the OSFL semifinals in the U-16 division. And the U-18 AAA Grenadiers capped off the weekend and continued their undefeated season with a 44-16 victory over the Durham Dolphins. They will host the OSFL semifinal game at home in 1 week's time. That is a wrap for your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. Coming up next, I've got weather and traffic for the week. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, July 8th, 26 is your high, and because of the cloudy conditions, it's going to feel like 26, UV index only of 6, dropping down to 18 overnight. Thursday, July 9th, 27 is your high with a mix of sun and cloud in the morning, becoming more cloudy into the afternoon. There is a possibility of rain, but it's only hovering around 17%, so it looks like it'll be another dry day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, July 10th, 27 is your high, feeling like 28 with the clear conditions in the forecast. A very sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Perfect start to your weekend. Saturday, July 11th, 26 is your high, feeling closer to 29. A few clouds in the sky, but largely sunny conditions, dropping down to 18 overnight. Sunday, July 12th, a beautiful, crisp, bright, sunny day here in the city of Kingston, feeling closer to 30. UV index of 9, dropping down to 18 overnight. And then starting off next week, Monday, July 13th, 25, cloudy with a 55% chance of precipitation. It will be quite humid, feeling closer to 29 degrees, factoring in the humidity. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Bath Road from Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard to Portsmouth Avenue. Expect delays for the installation of intersection pedestrian signals. The city is installing these signals at several locations to make it easier and safer for pedestrians to cross busy roads. They are being installed at the following intersections: Bath Road at Lafleur Park, Concession Street at Kings Court Avenue, and Stephen Street at Patrick Street. Wright Crescent at Palace Road to Palace Road is closed for a contractor to complete roadway repairs, pedestrian safety and access improvements, and traffic calming features on Wright Crescent. Norman Rogers Drive from Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard to Van Order Drive. Starting June 15th, Norman Rogers Drive is closed to through traffic to facilitate roadway rehabilitation and configuration improvements. This work will improve road condition, accessibility, and safety for all road users, including students, families, and local residents. The City of Kingston and Utilities Kingston are in the midst of a reconstruction of Princess Street. This major infrastructure project includes upgrades to underground and above-ground utilities, as well as improvements to enhance safety and comfort for pedestrians and cyclists. The City of Kingston is undertaking asphalt resurfacing on Johnson Street from University Street to Sydenham Street and Berry Street from Brock Street to Clergy Street West. Work includes the installation of a new top lift of asphalt and new pavement markings. Motorists and residents should expect daily road closures from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. with limited access during paving operations. Residents are asked to follow all posted signage and traffic control. The project is expected to be complete by July 10th. Berry Street from Queen to Queen is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street, and Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. That's it for your weather and traffic reports. Over now to CFRC's Genevieve Hinch with the concert and events calendar for the week.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario, I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community events, workshops, markets, or family-friendly activities, there is plenty of happening in Kingston this week, so let's get into it. Tuesday offers a few unique activities, including ASL Workshop on Sydenham Street and Teddy Bear Hospital at the Central Library, where kids can bring their favorite stuffed animals to learn about healthcare in a fun, hands-on way. Salsa in the Square also returns to Springer Market Square with music from Los Garcia, while the evening features Bill Kirchin performing at the Pros and Cons Benefit on Wolf Island. Wednesday features a creative mix of activities around the city, including the Solar Punk Writing Lab at Calvin Park Library and Games in the Square downtown. Music lovers can catch the Limestone Jazz Collective as part of the Swinging Summer Concert Series at City Hall, along with performances by Jay Harris at Spacer's Dockside and Arms Length, Mile End, and Meathead at the Broom Factory. Thursday marks the start of the Kingston Buskers Rendezvous, filling downtown streets with buskers and performers throughout the weekend. Families can also enjoy stories in the square, while the evening includes drag bingo at Daff Brewery and Buddhist meditation classes at the Sphere. Live music highlights include Mo Kenny at the Broom Factory, Matthew Holtzby, Lane Rodsep, and Daniel Raymond at Musiki, and Queer Kong at Hotel Wolf Island. Friday brings plenty to explore with the Buskers Rendezvous continuing downtown and a quick and cute card-making and scrapbooking workshop at the Tet Center. In the evening, Kicking It Country takes over the City Hall atmosphere, while music fans can catch In the Key of Blue at the Isabel Bader Center, Tim Baker at the Hayloft Dance Hall, The Oreos at the Waterfront, and Violet Archers with Hugh Christopher Brown on Wolf Island. Heading into Saturday, the Busker Rendezvous continues along the Saturday Session Concert Series in Confederation Park. Other highlights include the Mending Way Clinic at Cultivate Arts Common, the Napanee Country Jamboree, Tunes in the Tower featuring Kevin and the Kitchen Sink at Murnie Tower, and another performance in the Key of Blue. Live music also includes Who's Here at Spicer's Dockside, Jason Kent at the Cove Inn, and Ginny and Rearrangers with Squid Pistol at Overtime Sports Bar. Wrapping things up Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market returns from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., while the final day of the Kingston Buskers Rendezvous continues downtown. Music includes the afternoon performance of In the Key of Blue, Head Over Heels at the Cove Inn. That's your weekly events and concert calendar for July 6th through the 12th. And for more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is your events calendar brought to you by Flying V Production, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their up-and-coming shows and events through the season. I'm Jenny. Thanks for listening, and have a great week, Kingston!
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.